KHOI, Story City and Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk Monday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with interim station manager and engineer Mike Murphy. Currently, we have a frosty 32 degrees out there. However, the daytime temperatures are predicted to reach the upper 40s. It will be windy with occasional northwest gusts reaching 35 to 40 miles per hour. There will be plenty of sunshine. Then the winds will diminish after midnight as the temperature drops down to a low of 24 degrees. Let's welcome Dennis Hart with his news summary of the week from the pages of our local papers.
President Biden comes to Iowa. The state Supreme Court decides that Abby Finkenauer can appear on the June primary ballot. And more tornadoes make their way through the state. All part of what made news around Iowa last week. Let's begin with the president's visit. He went to an ethanol production plant near the town of Menlo, about 45 miles outside Des Moines last week, and announced he will lift restrictions on the summer sale of gasoline blended with 15% ethanol. The president said, in his words, "Homegrown biofuels have a role to play right now as we work to get prices under control and reduce the cost for families." He said he will direct the Environmental Protection Agency to use an emergency waiver to allow the sale of gasoline with 15% ethanol, called E15, to help boost fuel supplies over the summer. Governor Reynolds said she's thankful for the president's decision because she believes it will help her legislative plan to require gas stations to offer higher ethanol blends at the pump. The move could save consumers as much as 70 cents a gallon over regular gasoline. E15 typically sells for 10 to 30 cents less per gallon than E10, which is gasoline with 10% ethanol, and which is the type of gasoline most Americans buy. E15 is now banned in several states from June 1st to September 15th because it is thought to contribute to smog during summer months. Meanwhile, word last week that Iowa Democrats are no longer guaranteed a place at the front of the presidential nominating calendar after a panel of Democratic National Committee members voted to effectively strip them of their first-in-the-nation status. The DNC's Rules and Bylaws Committee voted to require a plan that will force state Democrats to make the case that they should be reinstated to their long-held position. Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina now have waivers from the national party to hold their nominating contests before the rest of the country. The plan removes all four states from that early voting window and requires them, along with any others that want to hold early contests, to apply for a new waiver. In a related story, the Republican National Committee decided last week to keep Iowa Republican caucuses first in the nation. Also last week, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled the Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Abby Finkenauer can now appear on the June primary election ballot. The court reversed an earlier district court decision that found Finkenauer had failed to qualify because of three signatures submitted as part of her nominating petitions that lacked a correct date. In the state legislature last week, the bottle bill appeared closer to a major overhaul than at any time in its 44-year history. The state house approved a compromise bill on a bipartisan vote that lets retailers opt out of redeeming empty containers. The bill still needs Senate approval. The current law, which was enacted in 1978, requires stores that sell alcohol or carbonated beverages and that collect the 5-cent deposit to accept the empty containers and redeem the deposit. But some retailers have refused to accept any empty containers, arguing they are too dirty to bring into their stores. The bill the House passed would let retailers opt out of accepting empty containers if certain requirements are met, and it says retailers who do opt out must post a sign saying they are opting out and direct consumers to the nearest redemption center. Also last week, 8 tornadoes were confirmed in the state on Tuesday night. There was property damage, but no serious injuries were reported. 2 of those tornadoes were EF2s, with wind gusts from 111 to 135 miles an hour. One of those touched down in Pocahontas County and blew northeast to Humboldt County. One injury was reported there. The second EF2 touched down in Humboldt County and caused no injuries. It was Iowa's third tornado outbreak in 5 months. Tuesday's storms came as part of a line of storms that had brought 47 inches of snow to parts of Montana and injured nearly 2 dozen people in central Texas. In response to the storms in Iowa last week, Governor Reynolds issued a disaster proclamation for 7 counties. They are Cerro Gordo, Hancock, Humboldt, Mitchell, Pocahontas, Winnesheek, and Worth counties. That proclamation will allow state resources to be used to respond to the effects of the severe weather. Now, for the coronavirus. 68 people were hospitalized for it in Iowa last week. That's an increase over the 33 said to be hospitalized the week before, but still lower than it was 2 weeks ago. There were 900 new reported cases of the virus in Iowa last week, compared to 930 the week before. And there were 21 new reported deaths from the virus in Iowa. That brought the total number of deaths from the coronavirus in Iowa to 9,475 since the pandemic started. 58% of Iowans are said to be fully vaccinated against the virus. In other news last week, word that the spread of the bird flu had raised the question of how farms managed to quickly kill and dispose of millions of chickens and turkeys to prevent its further spread. The number of poultry killed in the past 2 months has climbed to more than 24 million, with outbreaks being reported nearly every day. Those outbreaks have been reported in 24 states, with Iowa being the hardest hit. More than 13 million chickens and turkeys have been killed here. Some farms across the nation have had to kill more than 5 million chickens at a single site, the goal being to limit the spread of the disease and keep animals from suffering. The outbreak is the biggest since 2015, when producers had to kill more than 50 million birds. Also last week, word that in Ankeny and in Ames, hundreds of high school students walked out of their classes to show solidarity with teachers, transgender students, and others they say are under attack by state policymakers. The walkout was orchestrated by a new group of student activists across the Des Moines Metro. They said they're tired of legislation that affects what they called the integrity of their educations. Among the things they don't like, the recent ban on participation by transgender girls in female sports, as well as bills still alive in the state legislature that would let parents review instructional materials in classrooms and give families taxpayer-funded scholarships to pay for private school expenses. Meanwhile, in Des Moines, the school board approved a $610 million budget that included $9 million in cuts because of declining student enrollment. No classroom positions or programs are being eliminated. School officials said bigger cuts will have to be made in future years if student enrollment doesn't turn around. The Des Moines district is the state's biggest, with about 31,000 students enrolled this year. On the strange news beat last week, word that U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents at O'Hare International Airport's International Mail Facility in Chicago had discovered 6 human skulls bound for Iowa. A package from the Netherlands was x-rayed, and customs agents found 2 human skulls. 2 other packages from the same sender found 2 human skulls each. They were turned over to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's not known why those skulls were being shipped to Iowa. In Cedar Rapids last week, a suspect was arrested in the fatal shooting of 2 people and the wounding of 10 others in a nightclub. The suspect was identified as 32-year-old Timothy Liddell Rush. He was said to be the father of a baby he had with one of the fatal victims. Police say they believe there was a second shooter. Also last week, word that Iowa's Solicitor General was arrested after an incident in a Des Moines bar. Jeffrey Thompson was charged with assault and a disturbance at the Blazing Saddle in the East Village. He's accused of swinging multiple times with a closed fist at a bouncer who was trying to escort him out of the bar. Thompson could face up to 30 days in jail and a fine up to $855. The Solicitor General is a member of the State Attorney General's office and represents the state's interest in legal cases. On the labor front last week, word that Iowa's economic recovery lost momentum in March, shedding jobs for the first time in 5 months. But the state's unemployment rate still went down to 3.3%, compared to 3.5% in February. On the sports beat last week, word that big changes are coming to the iconic Field of Dreams in Dyersville. The new owners of the movie site, Go the Distance, took the wraps off plans for a nearly $100 million makeover of the famous farmland. They want to build youth baseball and football fields, team dormitories, a hotel, and other future improvements, including perhaps a 100,000-square-foot field house, an outdoor concert amphitheater, an RV park, and more. Will all this allow the original Field of Dreams to maintain its mystique? Stay tuned. On the gambling beat last week, word that Iowans had spent nearly $250 million on sports gambling in this past month of March alone. Experts said Iowa State University's Sweet 16 runs and the University of Iowa's NCAA tournament berths helped boost the number of bets placed. The amount of money wagered last month was 8% more than in February. And one more note, and you might say that this story comes from the Scooping the Loop beat. There was word last week that the practice of scooping the loop had returned to Des Moines. That's when young people repeatedly circle Locust Street and Grand Avenue in Des Moines, mostly at night and on weekends when the weather is nice. For those young people, it's fun. For others, Well, not so much. They don't like the loud engines, the clogged streets, and the excessive speed that's often in play. The Des Moines City Council has tried to stop scooping the loop by restricting downtown parking and installing a speed camera. Well, you can guess how well that's worked. We'll keep you advised on what happens next. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, scooping my way out of here right now, but planning to loop right back here on KHOI tonight at 7 for Capital Week, your listening post for politics Iowa style, when Laura Bell and I will hash out what's been going on in the state legislature and how it affects all of us. Then I'll pay a return visit to Local Talk this coming Friday morning at 7, when I'll report on what's been making news in Ames. I hope all of this is an offer you can't refuse, and I also hope we'll all go on to have a great week.
That's a little bit of Vince Guaraldi's trio, Cast Your Fate to the Wind, and I'm afraid if we cast our fate to the wind today, here at least in story, it'll end up down in Jasper Polk or even farther south. So thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. If you tune in tonight at 7 p.m., you'll hear Dennis join Lauren Bellin with Capital Week, so please be sure to tune in to KHOI as they summarize and discuss the happenings of the chambers under the Golden Dome. And if you are just tuning in, it's about 13 minutes after the hour. I am Mike Metz along with Mike Murphy, and joining us is Dr. Cornelia Flora. She has a great piece of information to share with us this morning. Good sunny morning, Cornelia.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Yes. What I'd like to ask you about is there's something going on. You know, this is Earth Week and Earth Day is Friday. Well, we've got activities going on throughout the area all weekend. Could you share with our listeners what that is?
Yes. We're having a climate change event that involves a good number of churches here in Ames and across the U.S. We have Brooks Brunt, who's going to be our keynote speaker, and we're going to start at 9:30 to 10:30. This will all be virtual, and he will speak up because we're talking about the faith of prophets, lessons for climate change. And he'll start at 9:30 to 10:30 discussing why prophets matter. And then from 10:45 to 11:45, we have a national webinar with a panel discussing prophetic action today. We're going to include Reverend Michael Malcolm, People Justice Council, and Alabama Interfaith Power and Light, Nellis Kennedy Howard of Honor the Earth, and our own Hector Arbuckle, a senior at Iowa State University from the Ames Climate Action Team.
I was going to ask who this is sponsored by locally.
This is the Ames UCC, United Church of Christ. It's organized by, we have a climate action team of which I'm a, that we participate in as a church. We also have a theologian in residence team led by Charles Schnichter, who set up this sort of amazing event. Saturday afternoon, we have another discussion by our scholar in residence who wrote Cathedrals on Fire, which talks about a church handbook for the climate crisis. That session 3 will be taking prophetic action, and they will discuss how to approach congressional leaders regarding federal legislation. Because our argument is, or our belief is, we start locally. Things we can do as individuals, and then collectively as a faith community and as a geographic community, but some of the things we need federal legislation for. And so we're going to discuss how to approach congressional leaders regarding federal legislation. And we'll have guidelines for discussing gaining media attention for climate-related events. So we're trying to get to say, yes, we're going to work with our fellow congregations to be active here in Story County, but we're also realize we need state and federal action as well. On Sunday, we're going to have start at 9 a.m., again virtually, with Caring for Our Earthly Garden. We'll have stories of local churches from Minnesota, Ohio, and Iowa on their healing climate activities, because churches must be local actors to care for God's creation, not just for their own congregations. Although caring for creation is caring for your congregation. And then a Sunday from 10:30 to 11:30, another Zoom broadcast, we'll have an interfaith service on creation and care. The participating congregations include AIM Religious Leaders Association, Iowa Interfaith Power and Light, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames, the Islamic Center here in Ames, St. Cecilia's Roman Catholic Church, Plymouth United Church of Christ in Des Moines, Ames Zen Fields Buddhist, Holy Transfiguration Orthodox Church here in Ames, the Hindu Temple in Madrid, and Ames Jewish Congregation and the Iowa Green Coalition. Oh my goodness, there's a fox running across my backyard.
Speaking of a good sign of creation, huh? As
yes.
Sun-filled fox, that would be great to see right now.
Yes, and my kitty who's on our printer is finding that fascinating.
Well, it's a good thing your kitty is not outside.
It is.
Yeah. What you're telling our listeners is that this goes across a number of different religious groups and theologies. I know that, it was the 90s or so that our creation became more of an important message to get across to members of congregations. I know the church that my wife and I belong to, we started talking about that at least in the mid-90s or thereabouts. Might have been a little earlier than that. For some of our listeners, they may feel that, well, this is a brand new thing, but in fact, people have been working at this for a while. But this is, you're saying, an international meeting.
It really is important, because part of faith communities is community and working together and finding what is it that unites us and how do we work together to make that happen. And all the religions that are participating have as part of their faith is caring for God's creation. So what are ways we can do it and do it appropriately and do it together?
Well, that's a key point there. Doing it together, an appropriate way to do it, because like political borders, the environment, our blessing of nature, does not recognize political boundaries or religious boundaries. This is all part of us.
Yes, I think that's the most important piece that we're trying to say, is we are all part of the same creation, and we need to work hard to preserve it. because I think our snow on Easter gave an example of how climate change is functioning. We have drought, we have floods, we have extreme heat, we have unseasonal cold, and a lot of this, we now have the science that tells us, is related to what people are doing.
And I think it's important to stress that this is an international meeting, and I recently was with a group in Kenya and talked to some of the people there, and they are very concerned about what's going on with their climate, because their seasons, their livelihood in many cases depend on a reliable rainy season for their animals that they depend on, and it's coming at times that are no longer predictable. Not also to shortchange the fact, but about 85% of their electricity needs are fulfilled with hydropower, for example, and rainy seasons being less dependent, they're actually starting to migrate away from hydropower and adopt solar and some wind power. So there's an example of it's not just affecting us, it's worldwide.
Yes. Yes, and those droughts are so dangerous in these countries that depend on agriculture. They used to be able to sometimes do a little bit of irrigation. Now that's almost impossible. I worked with farming systems for a very long time, and we already saw in Africa people saying, farmers would say, well, if it rains during this period, I will plant this. If it rains a little later, I will plant that. But they were already paying attention to what the climate was doing and responding to it. But now it's even more unreliable. And if the rains start, you have no assurance that they will continue.
Again, let's review briefly what our message is here as far as the 23rd and 24th, the two-day event. If you could just go over the main points of that, Cornelia, I'd appreciate it for our listeners.
Okay, we start at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday the 23rd with a keynote session on why prophets matter today. That will be the Reverend Burnt. Then at 10:45, we'll continue with a national webinar that includes a senior at Iowa State University, Hector Arbuckle, with other people from across the country and discussing prophetic action today. Then at Saturday at 3, we will discuss taking prophetic action. Sunday at 9, we will have local churches from Minnesota, Ohio, and Iowa talk about what their healing climate activities with the climate are. And then we will have at 10:30 an interfaith service on creation and care, which involves a number of local congregations with multiple faiths. You can register for this at www.aimsucc.org/theologian-in-residence.
And is that all spelled out lowercase?
All spelled out lowercase and theologian in resident.
Okay, so we'll be sure to get that on our website and emphasize the fact that anybody is welcome to join in on this Zoom.
Yes.
Sounds like a full set of events. It's timely because, of course, this is Earth Week, Earth Year in my mind.
Yes.
Earth Weekend, a lot of activities. This will tie in well with some of the other activities that are going on locally. So even if folks can join in for portions of this, we highly recommend it. Cornelia, thank you for joining in with us this morning, and we hope that you have a successful Zoom meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're going to be talking to our Story County Community Foundation director. Liz, are you there?
I'm here, Mike. How are you this morning?
We're doing well.
Great.
It's a great sunny morning. Everybody better put some rocks in your pocket because it's going to be windy later on today. What I'd like to ask, Liz, is you've got three guests, it looks like, today, and we're here to talk the foundation's granting, and I assume these are one of the recipients of one of the grants. Is that correct?
It is, Mike. Harmony Clothing Closet in Nevada was awarded one of our 17 community grants this last year, so it's great to have them here. Jaylene is the volunteer coordinator, so I'm going to have her tell you all about Harmony Clothing Closet in Nevada.
Good morning, Jaylene.
Good morning. It's Jaylene with a short A.
Jaylene.
Thanks, Mom and Dad, right?
Okay.
Yeah, Harmony Clothing Closet is a nonprofit that started in Nevada. Well, in May, it will be celebrating its 15th birthday, so it's been operating for 15 years almost. We collect donations and then repurpose them for free by letting community residents and people from lots of different cities come and select what they need. So that is kind of what Harmony Clothing Closet does.
Now, do you strictly take clothing, or are there some other items associated, accessories, those kinds of things, or what are you willing to accept? I assume at the minimum of gently used product. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's mostly clothing. And then Elizabeth, do you want to talk about other donations that we accept?
Sure. I'm Elizabeth, and I also participate in the Harmony Clothing Closet. And we take a lot of gently used items, so thank you for asking. Really, the only things we can't take are furniture and like large electronics, because we just don't have room for it. We are so blessed to have mounds of clothes come and go from us that's our main focus. But we do use a lot of things like bedding and toys and children's books, things like that. Small household items.
Small kitchen appliances would be acceptable here, or what is your...
Possibly, yeah, if they're in great working order.
Okay.
That's usually our concern, is that there might be something not working about them is why we have them. But we all know we have things in our house that we just don't use. And so we're happy to rehome them. And we rehome a lot of things every month. You know, between 10 and 15,000 items a month go out our door for free to other people in need. So it's a great recycling program, and it just continues to grow with the support of everyone and the foundation to help us keep making the needed improvements to our building.
Well, this is just a timely message to get across to our listeners in light of the fact that we're honing in on Earth Week, and so people are thinking about recycling and repurposing. Mm-hmm. So what a timely message, and congratulations for winning the grant.
Thank you.
Ladies, why don't you tell Mike a little bit about Project Makeover?
So Project Makeover, we had a business person in Nevada who generously, he had been letting us use the space that the building that our store is in, and mm-hmm. he decided to gift the building to us.
Oh, great.
In the fall. Yeah, which was fantastic, because our budget would never have allowed a purchase of the space. So that was just a huge blessing. And so then we also, assuming ownership of that space, needed to make a few repairs, including the roof over the garage needed to be fixed. Our heating and cooling system needs to be updated because it's hard to get parts. We're not even sure how old it is. So a new HVAC system, and then we had some tuck pointing on our brickwork that also needed to be done. So we kind of titled the whole project Harmony Makeover and began fundraising about a year ago, actually. We kind of kicked it off in May of last year. So yeah, so we were really blessed with lots of business donations and also private individuals. And then we secured the grant from Story County Community Foundation, which really pushed us over into, we can actually start fixing these things. Currently, we're waiting on some supplies because that's what everybody's doing right now.
Sure.
So I wish we could report that we've completed the project, but HVAC systems are kind of on hold right now. So
gosh, maybe there's an angel out there in our listening audience who could help you out. And what would really be great is if they could upgrade it to a point where it's maybe depending more on renewable resources. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be fantastic.
Gotta try.
Right. Well, and Harmony is all about keeping things out of the landfill. So someone else can use it. Yeah, that would be fantastic. But yes, renewable energy resources. Yeah, just becoming more efficient that way. Those are definitely our goals for sure.
Okay. So are there items that are coming in and leaving? Are you're kind of passing things through to people in need? Are there particular items that you see that pass through a little more quickly than others that maybe you are you could use more of? Or are there things that maybe you don't need to use as much of? What are you seeing as far as flow through?
What do you think, Elizabeth?
Honestly, we take clothes from the smallest to the largest. We get just such a variety of shoppers that we happily accept any size of gently used clothing. And of course, as we have seasonal changes, we get a new influx of shoppers because
sure.
kids are, like, especially children are outgrowing their clothes and needing a new set. But we honestly use any type of clothing so that, you know, and since we haven't left winter yet, we'll still be using that clothing. So we can drag that season out a little farther. Yes, thumbs down to that.
So when it is a seasonal situation with the project makeover, is that going to provide the ability for you to have a little more storage for things that are seasonal so you can kind of rotate things as they go through? Or how are you set up for that?
Well, we have a very nice space, as Jillian said, that was donated, which allows us to try and put everything out that we can year round, because we know that people will select it and keep it, store it off for the next. But we just try to put out everything that we can year round.
Okay. Anything else, Jonlene, that you would like to? Jillian?
You're fine. I'm completely used to it. No, we're just really pleased that we have the funding ready to, you know, make our changes. And a large part of that is due to receiving this grant from Story County Community Foundation. Yeah, we just have to wait till we can put the stuff in. We have to wait for the stuff.
So,
this has been just the way the community supports our organization. It's just a delightful, delightful group to be involved with.
Okay. So let's tell our listeners where you're located. We're talking Nevada, but we didn't exactly give you the, Nevada's not that big a town, understand, but still we'd like your location. Where are you located?
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
We're located at 1122 6th Street. So it's the main street in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
And we are accepting donations currently from 4 to 7 each Monday afternoon. And we accept them in the alley, so it's very convenient. We are also in the midst of giving out prom dresses.
Ah.
And we have a floor of our building is dedicated to prom dresses. So we encourage people to come and get their fancy outfits for the upcoming dances.
Okay, so now I'm going to test whether you're urban or rural. If I'm coming from the west and the Ames direction on Lincoln Way, and I come to 6th Street, Main Street, which way do I turn?
South.
Oh, she's from the country. If you'd have said right.
You will take a right.
There you go. Okay. Very
Yes,
good.
and you could actually come from either Highway 30 or Lincoln Way, and it'll be a straight shot to us on
Yeah.
Sixth Street.
Excellent. And for the folks who were probably under a rock or in a cave, Sixth Street has been virtually, it's a brand new street, sidewalks, everything. It's really, I think, made shopping up and down Nevada a lot more friendly. Parking is great, that's for sure. And I'm sure when all of that construction was going on, it maybe cut down on your foot traffic a little bit.
It didn't change it incredibly because we have a back entrance, and
Ah.
so we just welcomed people in a different side of the building.
Okay. So they got to
Yeah.
see all sides of your operation.
They did, yes.
Inside, outside, front side, back side.
Nothing to
Yep.
hide here, folks.
I know, we're an
And
open book.
everything has a gently used price, right?
Yes, free.
Very
Yes.
great,
Well,
yeah.
that the remodel of the street was not free, but all of
Sure.
our items are free to the public, and we encourage anyone to come and shop.
Okay. And again, your open hours for receiving deliveries is 4 to 7 on Monday for donations, correct? And
Correct.
if they're coming to Main Street, what's the best way to get over to the rear or the east side of your would it be east side?
Yeah.
The rear side of your entrance.
Yeah, it would be the west side,
West side.
and you would just take the alley that's just corresponding to 6th Street.
Okay, and
It's
I
right next.
assume you have a bell or something back there to let folks know that there's somebody back at your loading area that needs some assistance.
Yep, we always have someone there to receive, so
Very good.
we'll be looking for donators.
Okay, now you didn't tell us what your store hours, what your open store hours are, did you?
No, they're currently the same, and then by appointment.
Okay. So
Four
4
to
to 7
seven
on
and by
Mondays
appointment.
or by appointment.
Yep.
Very good. And that's at 11226 6th Street in the main street of downtown Nevada. That's sounds like a great way for our listeners to contribute to those in need or looking for something special. And at the same time, we can repurpose or recycle things. Any last words for we break away for our next guest.
Other than you
It's
sounded like a commercial for Harmony when you said all of that,
Oh,
that
and I volunteer here, so I just volunteered for you too.
was fantastic.
It's a great time to spring clean, and we're all spring cleaning right now, aren't we? Well, at least some of us are. I know I have a trunk full of things I need to drop off at Harmony, so please, they do some great work for the community.
That's great. And thank you, Liz, for showcasing these folks, for bringing them in today. So, all right.
Absolutely.
That's Harmony
Thank you.
Closet in Nevada. And I would sure say, especially this week, if at least our listeners would think about getting some things organized in the next week or so, I'm sure you can take items all year round. It's not a 365, but folks can be thinking about that and preparing for that Monday at the beginning of the week to drop items off. So, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful morning. prices each new working hour. Seems to me that people keep seeing more and more as they are the same. Lead the way,
it's okay.
When they are the same, it's okay.
All the way,
when they are the same, lead the way.
If you're just tuning in, it's about 41 minutes after the hour, or 19 minutes to the hour, and we have Reverend Brooks Berndt is joining us now. Good morning, Reverend.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Yes. So we had a visit with Dr. Cornelia Flora this morning about some of the activities that are going on this weekend. Perhaps you can fill us in a little bit more about some of the details.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So this weekend, we've got an event coming up that's being hosted by Ames United Church of Christ in collaboration with a variety of community partners and also the national offices of the United Church of Christ. We're a denomination of some 5,000 churches around the country. And so we're coming together to put together a special event for this Earth Day week. And the focus for us is really on how we can dig into the tradition of prophets that come out of the Hebrew scriptures that more than one faith shares. And so we're looking to Moses, and we're looking to Amos, and we're looking to others who can tell us what's needed in these times of crisis that we're facing. And what's needed is for people to develop the courage to take a stand publicly, to say that we are in the midst of a moment in which this, what Pope Francis calls our common home, has caught on fire. And we need to come together to take action so that we can change this course that we're on as a civilization, as a people, as a planet, and do what is necessary. And so we'll be doing some events. I happen to be the theologian in residence for Ames United Church of Christ at the moment. And so I'll get things started off with a keynote on Saturday morning. And then that will be followed by a panel discussion of people who really are showing us how to take prophetic action today. We've got Nellis Kennedy Howard, who for 4 years was co-executive director of Honor the Earth, an indigenous-led organization. She led that organization with Winona LaDuc. She'll be on the panel. She also happens to lead a church herself as well. Then we'll have Michael Malcolm, who comes from Birmingham, Alabama, and has been a real leader as a minister addressing climate issues throughout the South. And then we will also have Hector Arbuckle, who is a student at Iowa State University, has been a real climate leader in the local Ames scene. And so we're going to have them all speak about how they have been taking part in prophetic public action so that we can get some insights, because we all need to learn from what they're doing.
Now, the one thing I didn't ask Cornelia was, during this webinar, this Zoom that folks are joining in, will you have opportunities for folks listening in to ask questions via chat or some other method?
Yes, yeah. So there'll be opportunities following both the keynote and the panel discussion for members of the audience to ask questions. And so they can type in those questions, and they'll be asked to whoever is speaking at the moment. And so, yeah, it'll be an interactive affair.
Okay, that's very good. And if you could just review again what the website is for folks to get involved and get the information for the Zoom, that would be great.
Yeah, let me get that for you. The link here for that I will give is if you type in bit.ly and then the forward slash and then spell out Faith of Prophets as if it was one word, no breaks or spaces.
Okay.
So FaithOfProphets.
Very
so
good.
Again, that's bit.ly forward slash FaithOfProphets. So,
okay.
Yeah, look that up, and that will take you to where you can register for these Zoom events that will be taking place on Saturday.
And we'll be sure to get that included in our website as well. As far as some of the individuals, you gave us a little bit of background on the panel members. Will they each present a little bit of summary about themselves before the panel conversation proceeds? How will that work?
Yeah, I'll be moderating the panel discussion, and I'll give an introduction and some background to each of them about their respective bios. And then they'll each give their own remarks for about 10 minutes each. I imagine they may go in further about themselves or the organizations, but then they'll really be honing in on examples of what we're calling prophetic action to just give people insights on what can be done today.
Okay. Now, growing up, the first Earth Day, I was a junior in high school, and many of us at the time thought that that was going to be the start of a real movement, and it seemed like things languished for a while. Of course, we were young and bright-eyed and ready to take on the world, and some of us were able to make some inroads, but it seems like there was a reawakening in the 90s, if I've got my timeline right. How did United Church of Christ, where did you fill in that process, timeline?
Yeah, so through an organization that really arose from the civil rights movement, it's called the Commission for Racial Justice. It was the United Church of Christ Commission for Racial Justice. That part of our denomination was really, in many ways, the central organization for launching the environmental justice movement. And so just as the Montgomery bus boycott was a watershed event for the civil rights movement, the watershed event for the environmental justice movement, and when I say environmental justice, that's different than talking about environmentalism broadly speaking. Environmental justice really is about focusing first and foremost on environmental racism, and also how when you harm the environment, you're inevitably harming people, and people who are kind of at the bottom of the societal totem pole, you know, or the pole in a way in terms of race, in terms of class, and so forth. And so you have this movement that originated, really people began organizing in the late 1970s, but there was in 1982 where this 6-week long civil disobedience campaign happened in a place called Warren County, North Carolina. And what had led to this moment was that a company had been hired to take PCBs, a known carcinogen, mm-hmm. out of the state of North Carolina. But they decided that to save a buck, they would just dump it on along the country roads in North Carolina. And so soon you had these people that at the time looked like they were wearing spacesuits. Now we know they're hazmat suits.
Right.
But people in the community became very concerned. Like, if this is so dangerous that they're dressed up in these spacesuit-looking things, then this is something we need to be worried and concerned about. And so the state of North Carolina then, you know, decide, well, we're going to clean up all of these PCBs and we're going to have to dump them somewhere. Now, you know, if you're taking a scientific approach, you say, okay, we're not going to dump this anywhere where there's going to be a high water table level because we don't want this getting anywhere near anybody's drinking supplies. We want, you know, to be as safe as possible. But that's not what they did. They decide they're going to dump it exactly in that kind of place where there is a high water table level. And it was in Warren County. And so why Warren County? Well, Warren County was the county that had the highest percentage of Black population. It was one of the poorest counties in the state of North Carolina. And so they had chosen that community, whether you say as intentional or unconscious, the fact of the matter is what matters are the consequences. And the consequence, it was that this largely Black and low income county was the place where they're gonna dump this known carcinogen.
The target was an area of racial concern, economic concern, people who didn't have much of a voice.
Yeah, yep. So they targeted the most disenfranchised, right? And so probably not expecting resistance, but resistance is what they got. And people first started meeting in the local county courthouse, and it was people of all races and classes. And soon they started meeting in a Baptist church. And they got so riled up, they didn't know what to do, how to channel their energy. So they brought in a veteran from the civil rights movement, a UCC minister, Leon White. And he got them organized. And Dolly Burwell was a member of his church, and she was one of the lead organizers. She's the one who brought him in. And she was also on the board for Martin Luther King Jr.'s civil rights organization as well. And so these people who came out of the civil rights movement then kind of took this lead in getting people organized. And so they got themselves organized. And so when the first dump truck started to roll in, people put their bodies on the road to prevent those dump trucks from arriving. And that first day, Dolly Burwell got arrested. And as she was being arrested, she had her 10-year-old daughter, Kimberly, that morning and said, "I'm not going to school, Mom." And Dolly was, you know, just like, "Okay, go ahead. You're going to come with me." And so she then got in, the 10-year-old then got interviewed on national television, and she was in tears as her mother was being arrested and loaded, on the paddy wagon. And as she would later say, she wasn't, you know, crying because her mother was being arrested. She was crying because she was afraid of the PCBs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So this sounds like part of the information that you're going to be discussing this weekend.
Well, this history I do talk about all the time, but I probably wasn't going to get into this specific history this weekend. We're really talking about the climate crisis, and of course, I do always look to our history for inspiration because that's how every time I return to that history, I learn something new.
Well, there was a famous individual who escapes my mind right now, but if we don't learn about history, we're bound to repeat it. So, paraphrase at least to that. For our listeners, I have to point out that PCBs are carcinogens that one of the common uses for them are to cool electronics. Perhaps something people would be aware of would be some of these older transformers, for examples, that were lubricated with PCBs, and the older ones would leak or they'd be changed out, and that's where some of the source of this material, this hazardous material, was to be dumped into these systems.
Yeah, yep, and people actually went to jail over this for dumping these, and so. So it's clearly a real harm and a danger to people, and so it led to this, 6-week campaign where you had people from around the country showing up and putting their bodies on the road to prevent this from happening. And it was in the midst of this that there was a young UCC minister, also on the Commission for Racial Justice, named Benjamin Chavis, who he later went on to be the head of the NAACP for a while. And but he was a young minister who had recently gotten freed from a North Carolina prison because he had been framed as a community organizer. And so he had just gotten out, and he wasn't planning initially to be an organizer, but he got thrown into that a leading role in that movement. Very and became good. Eventually the kind of the leading public figure, and he's the one who coined the phrase environmental racism.
Very good. Thank you, Reverend Brooks. Thank you for joining us this morning on Local Talk. And again, our listeners, I will be placing in our on our website these ways to get a hold of you and get into the Zoom. So thank you again.
Terrific. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
So, speaking about Tuesdays, tomorrow on Local Talk, Dan Haug of Prairie Rivers, along with City Engineer Tracy Peterson and Story County Watershed Coordinator Sarah Carmichael, will be joining us to discuss water quality issues. Then later in the hour, Ames Information Officer Susan Guiasta and Stormwater Analyst Liz Calhoun will also be visiting with us about some events on Iowa Creek, the stream cleanup event, which will occur in late April. Our thanks to engineer Mike Murphy and to producer Lynn Carey for all our assistance, and a big thank you to one of KHOI's best, Dennis Hart, for his excellent summary of our local news. You also heard from Dr. Cornelia Flora, Story County Communications Foundation's director, Liz Zurcher, Harmony Clothing Closets, Jaleen Hornbuckle, Elizabeth Gint, and we also heard from Reverend Dr. Brooks Brent. I have been your host, Mike Metz. KHOI provides platform for citizen and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening and supporting KHOI, and we will see you again on the radio.
KHOI, Story City, Ames.